Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director here at cybered.io. And on our podcast today, I'm thrilled to have my colleague, Dan Grosu, who is the chief technology officer and technology leader here at ISMG, our parent company. And I've been working with Dan for the almost 4 years that I've been here. And you all know my background, and I've had the pleasure of working with lots of CTOs in the past. But in my experience, Dan is the best one that I have ever had the good luck to work with on a regular basis like this. So welcome, Dan. I'm glad you could join us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, Steve. Glad to be here.
Terrific. Why don't you give our listeners a kind of a short bio, a little background on who you are and where you've been and what your how your credentials got built up over time.
I will, and I'll start in the middle of the journey, as it were. And I am a computer science graduate and a scientist by heart. I've spent a lot of my time in the cybersecurity realm ever since the good old days when the Linux kernel was in its 0.9 something version range. And that should date me pretty well. I've spent a lot of time doing security in specific verticals such as automotive, healthcare, banking, and I've done a lot of consulting in this regard as well before joining ISMG, where I think I was one of the first handful of employees for ISMG, and pretty much launched right into the technical side that ISMG required me to take care of.
That's great. And here you are today. How long have you been with ISMG, Dan?
I want to say since 2008, if memory serves well. So long enough.
Yeah, yeah. And you operate out of Ontario, Canada. Is that right?
Yes, I'm actually in Ontario, Canada, right across the border from where you would see Detroit on the map. So right across the border in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And I assume you have no intention of relocating down to the lower 48 or whatever it is, 50 now, anytime soon?
Well, the way they say is never say never, so I'll keep that option open.
Okay. So you and I have seen some remarkable stuff happen here in the last, we'll call it 9 months, I guess, getting close to a year now as November approaches. I don't know about you, but I've never seen a product go through a release cycle, if you want to call it that, the way that the LLM products have and elicit this kind of response from that many people. I mean, it completely demolishes all records for concurrent users during any fixed period of time, 30 days, 90 days, 120 days, whatever, right? And so everybody's talking about AI. As usual, we don't understand what we're talking about for the most part. And there are tremendous upsides here, and I'm excited about all of them. There are very specific upsides for cybersecurity, and I'm, of course, equally excited about those. But there are tremendous downsides here as well. So perhaps you could share your perspective on that sort of topical area with us.
Of course, and I'd be glad to. I think just for the sake of correctness, very much in agreement with what you're saying, Steve. Though this is at this point not new technology. I think what we are witnessing right now is, the technology coming into fruition and into the hands of the larger masses. It's becoming so easy to use. It's becoming so close to what we do on a daily basis. And these large language models and machine learning and AI and whatever the term du jour ought to be, is again nothing new. These things have been around for quite a long time. They've had their summers, quote unquote, their winters, where folks tend to get excited about special incremental developments in these technologies. But I think what we're witnessing right now is what I would call sort of at least from a use case perspective, a groundbreaking development in these technologies. And I'm referring here to AI in general and these large language models, the transformer-based models and machine learning sort of as a general umbrella, as it were. So quite exciting times we live in. And I've always been a proponent of these types of technologies. And as the geek in me always looks for new cool things to play around with, this has been certainly at the forefront for me for quite some time. I would want to say, even prior to it becoming very, very popular.
Yeah, and I think that the kind of AI that you refer to when you talk about it's been around for a while is that discriminative AI, which all product companies, and one that leaps to mind for me anyway, is Darktrace out of England, who we had the good fortune to be the first integration partner in North America with back in 2012, used the kind of algorithm that is described in discriminative AI to establish behavioral baselines when monitoring network behavior and to be able to determine behavior that was anomalistic to that baseline. So that kind of algorithmic, that kind of math, if you will, has been around for a long time and has been used in lots of different security software products, where what we're trying to do is identify aberrant or anomalistic behavior. What is new, at least in my mind and for me, is the generative AI approach with these large language learning models, which when you think about it, and here's part of what frightens me about this is that these models are continually being updated with data that 200-300 million people are throwing at it every day to increase their ability to understand what's going on in their markets, whatever those markets happen to be: commodity traders, gold, silver, copper, equity traders, stock performances, bond traders, bond futures, and so forth and so on. But the data that they add to those models, it's like nobody, it feels like nobody thinks about what happens to that data, and it's subsumed by the LLM. What are your thoughts about that?
So I think I second that opinion, and going back to the core of these large language models and the corpus of data that they're trained on, I think the more complex models that we see today, your OpenAI type models, recently Llama and others, being trained on large corpus of data, I think has been thought of being the way to go in terms of adding smarts to the model, if smarts is indeed the right term. However, I think nobody had put any thought into the downsides of adding these types of smarts into these models. So clearly a lack of guardrails here. And I think in my mind, the most alarming cases where these large language models are being put to work, and I would say these generic large language models are being put to work, is in the context of making critical decisions. And since we're talking about cybersecurity in general, right, anything that relates to these large language models in their default or generic format, making decisions or suggesting, I should say, decisions on cybersecurity without the appropriate governance, without the appropriate guardrails, is what scares me today.
Yeah, no kidding. I actually know a guy that put his bank account information onto the OpenAI LLM and then had it become his personal finance assistant, I guess, and had ChatGPT go out and look at all of his checking and credit card account entries and then track down the source of those charges. And he was delighted that it was able to identify subscriptions that he no longer cared about, that he forgot he had been subscribed to. And he was able to save, you know, $150 a month or something off of that. And I thought, well, that's that's great, but what's the downside of that? Do you see any downside there? And it's like, no, there's no downside there. So when you talk about all of the risks associated with unintentional shadow IT, there are actually people doing stuff like I just described, which are low, you know, which it doesn't get riskier than that.
Yeah, indeed. I think, you know, LLMs and you know, the recent, you know, stars in this LLM arena, you know, have demonstrated remarkable capabilities to perform a varied amount of tasks. And I think, you know, this whole prompt engineering field is going to be something to contend with going forward, and folks find more and more use cases for these large language models. However, there need to be some considerations around it. And I know at this point I'm not the lone voice out there saying this. Even with additional training, even with fine tuning of these LLMs, I think we're still very far from addressing ethical concerns, biases, fairness, responsible usage of these models, specifically in a cybersecurity context, where again the risks are huge, right? If we're thinking about and I don't want to necessarily name names, but these pilot type products right now that rely heavily on these large language models, it's akin to basically saying, please, large language model, take the wheel, and hopefully we'll get to the right destination. Which again, being more on the risk adverse or risk aware, I should say, side of the cybersecurity business, I have a huge problem with. Cannot deny the revolution these large language models have started, but again, cannot look away from the very, very obvious downsides of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, greed and avarice always trump morality in every other field. So it should not surprise any of us what the outcomes here are going to be. What's your opinion, having said that, what's your opinion about sentience? So you just said we're further away than closer to these LLMs being smarter than they are today, I guess is one way to put that. But they're going to be trained in the sort of the image and likeness of their owners, pretty much, right? So if we had an adversarial country that wanted to use it for purposes that we would look at and not deem moralistic or ethical in nature, they will do that. So the large body of sort of the founder, what do you want to say, the inventors of generative AI have, they wrote the famous, whatever it was, 1,000, technology folks letter to be wary of this stuff and all of that. And Google fired up those three very smart researchers who complained that, we had, gender and racial biases built into these things. We're never going to eliminate gender and racial biases because of the source of the information. The source of the information is the internet, right? So do you see a time when you could actually, when these LLMs, I'll say this, humanize themselves, cross that magic line where they're capable of independent judgment?
It's a very, very loaded question there, Steve. And then here's my take on it. To directly answer your question, sentience, I'm not worried about at this point in the game. If I were to sort of draw a silly parallel to where we're at right now, I think we're, with video games, I think we're still in the Pong era of large language models. That's not to say that, as we see with games right now, you can have somebody at thousands of miles away command a drone as it would be a game. And, we find ourselves right now in the Pong era of LLMs, but what I cannot know right now, and I do not know right now, is what that time delta is from the Pong stage to the, sort of VR type drone control game, if you will. And I think right now, again, getting back to your initial sort of sentience question, these LLMs are the product of the corpus of data, right? If the corpus of data allows the LLM to synthesize, for lack of better terminology, the impression of sentience, I would buy that at this point. However, the sentience in its true definition, I think we're far, far away from that. Don't know if it will ever happen, but, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's also, I guess, in how you define sentience. If you just explore the world of critical thinking for a second, you can kind of come up with a model where, based upon a certain set of assumptions, that you could predetermine judgmental directions based on those assumptions. And I think that even though it was crude and very early, that Air Force experiment that they conducted where they had sent, a drone off on a mission, and the mission statement turned out to be the problem, because the mission statement was do whatever it takes to take out all of these targets. And the LLM interpreted do whatever it takes as the mission statement. So those are two different things. Take out the targets, do whatever it takes to take out the targets. And I don't think it, from my perch over here, it felt to me like the guys that designed the prompt or the series of prompts hadn't thought through this adequately. So what the drone ended up doing was taking out the operator and the control tower as the operator and the control tower started to get in the way of the drone's ability to take out the targets. That looks pretty sentient to me. So I guess, and if you explode that up by 100x. You know, I can imagine a world pretty quickly where we've got LLMs that are perfectly capable of doing that.
Yeah, I think here is where you and I will respectfully disagree on this, as we do in many occasions. But in my mind here, I think sentience sort of is a product of at least a few characteristics, if you will, like self-awareness, consciousness, the ability to take in experiences, right, as they happen. And at this point in time, from a very, very practical standpoint, these key characteristics that you know, one would define as sentient characteristics are not, in effect, doable. These LLMs right now cannot do that. And I think, you know, and again, this is one of these Orwellian type discussions in the future, you know, that might very well be possible. But as it stands right now, and even in the near future, I certainly don't see how that would happen. As it stands right now, I think the closest to what we have in this regard is you know, the agents acting on behalf of large language models, right? So we have the large language models that are trained on a large corpus of data and have the ability to dictate basically commands to agents. But these agents right now, you know, lack in terms of overall sophistication, at least as far as I'm concerned. So sentience in the true sense of the word, and even looking at some of the, I would say, essential key characteristics, I don't see that happening anytime soon. I'll go back to my analogy of being in the Pong era.
Yeah, no, we don't disagree. I think what happens here is that we have a semantics issue here. Tank, pure definition of sentience, I don't see that happening either anytime soon. But there will come a time, I think, when we'll certainly get close to that. What I mean is that if we're not careful about the instruction set that we provide, these tools certainly have a ton of power to backfire on us. And I think, you know, it's another case where humans have to be much more careful about how they, quote, play around with the technology. I'm borrowing that quote from Ted Lieu, who is a U.S. congressman, who, when asked about whether he allows his staff to use ChatGPT, said, well, of course I do. I mean, I just tell them to play around all you want. I mean, there's no risk or threat here. So I don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's not really a problem. So let me ask you this then, if we can think about the intersection, and this comes up a lot in stuff that I do, intersection between the business of cybersecurity in a commercial context and the business of cybersecurity in a state context. In other words, the question is, what do you think that cybersecurity practitioners, CISOs, et cetera, can learn and benefit from understanding nation state issues and strategies around the use of cybersecurity, both offensively and defensively?
I certainly do. And I think to me, or at least in my mind, there's not a major distinction in between the two. And why I say that is that in my mind, the patterns of exploitation, the patterns of attack, the patterns of all of these approaches being defensive approaches or proactive approaches or attack or things along these lines. The patterns are identical, whether you're talking nation states, or you're talking mom and pop shops, or you're talking banks, casinos as of recent, et cetera. So the game is played around the same patterns. I think the only differentiator there is scale. And scale can certainly be something that we can learn from, right? Some attacks make sense at scale, some don't make sense at scale. But I think for the individual CISOs, CTOs, and whoever the guardians are on whichever side of the equation, be it on the nation side of the equation or on the corporate side of the equation, I think there's a lot to learn from these patterns. Again, them being on the corporate as well as the nation state side.
Yeah, well, I do too, and thank you for that. You know, I'm conscious of the time. We've spent about a half an hour here discussing these topics, and it's been great. And I want to ask you one final question here before we wrap up, which is that the importance of data in the context of generative AI and the ways in which most companies approach the retention of critical operational data like log data or syslog data and NetFlow and so forth, post SIM controls data, and what your view of that is.
Again, a very, very loaded question. And as I hang around with luminaries such as yourself on a regular basis, I keep being reminded that in general terms, the games are not new. It's just the players. And I'll expand on that a little bit here. In the past, enterprises have spent a lot of time gathering all sorts of data, be it product-related data, be it customer-related data, be it cybersecurity-related data, and everything in between. But I think what we as an industry have done a pretty poor job at least so far, is making sense of that data. Now, how does that sort of work in the context of these new quote-unquote toys we have on our hands here, like these large language models, is the old adage still stays that you can learn from history only if you want to. So I think my thought on this is, I think many of these large enterprises that have had collected data in the past, specifically around cybersecurity, can now leverage this data in a very interesting ways. Imagine a day where all of your historical data can now serve as a corpus for training some of these large language models, or even fine-tuning some of these large language models. I think with the amount, you know, even in the last decade, ever since, you know, data lakes and large stores of data, you know, have become overwhelmingly popular, I think a lot of these enterprises can now go back, dust off those data sets, and see what they have missed in analyzing the data by applying this new approach of training and fine-tuning large language models on their historical data, and then trying to answer historical questions. And by virtue of the training, trying to defend by looking at the history going forward. Hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no kidding. And thank you for that. You're right. And we need to, I'd like to explore that at some length. And maybe we can do that on our next show. And I wanted to announce to our audience that Dan and I are going to do get sit down once a month going forward and chat for half an hour about what we think are the relevant topics that people need to think about, care about, pay attention to, what have you. So if you enjoyed this as much as I have, stay tuned for our next date and time here in terms of the release of this podcast. And I want to thank Dan for taking the time out of what I know firsthand is a really busy day to join me here and start this conversation. So thank you, Dan.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you, everyone. And looking forward to our next conversations. Appreciate it once again.
Great. And thank you to our audience for taking the time out of your day to listen to us ramble on here. And until next podcast, I am Steve King, your host, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.